Thanks. Good morning, Lisa. Good to see you. Okay, well, we'll start because today we're going to finish the parsha. As we were, yes, we are actually going to finish the parsha and start the next one in Ritz Hashem. Okay, go straight in. We'll see about next parsha what we'll do, but we'll start. Sure. Okay, so I think on Hanukkah. So I think there's still, well, today. And then another two more, I think, because the 10th or whatever.
Is the 2nd of December.
Yeah, it's the 2nd of December.
Is what day?
Hanukkah first night.
But that's on what day of the week?
Sunday.
Oh, so the last Monday of Hanukkah. No, we'll go till like the last week of school, which is, I don't know what day that is. Well, the 19th is the Friday, but the Monday before. I don't know what day it is. The 12th, not the 12th, it's earlier than the 12th. It's like the 10th or something. I don't know what day it is. Which day is a Monday? Okay, so the 10th. That's the last
day.
The last one will be on the 10th of December. Yes. Yeah. It's the last Monday.
Last night.
No.
So we still come on the 10th.
Yes, I will be here. Mitzvah Hashem on the 10th. Okay, beautiful. All right, so now if you turn to page 242, because we have only the last few psukim, until now we discussed the actual giving of the Torah, the scene, and all the effects and everything, and now there are two, I'd say you could categorize it, two or three halachas, so to speak, that we're being taught here that follow immediately after the giving of the Torah. Good morning, Leah. Okay, so page 242, Pasuk Yotes 19. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe. And Hashem says to Moshe, Koi Saimar el Bnei Yisrael, so you shall say to Bnei Yisrael. And when Hashem says, so you shall say, he means exactly with these words. This is exactly how you should say it. Exactly with this language, exactly these words. What should you say? And this is, let's not forget, this is like the next message, good morning, right after the giving of the Torah. So he says, Atem re'isem, ki min hashamayim dibarti imachem. You have seen that from the heavens I have spoken to you. And therefore, what seems to follow is, Hashem is a little bit concerned, and he says, Lo sa'asun iti, do not make with me. What shouldn't you make with me? Eleke kesef, gods of silver, veleke zahav, and gods of gold. Loi sa'asu lachem, you shall not make for yourselves. Okay, we can maybe, I want to look at the Rashi, and then we'll go to the next pasuk, and then we'll go a little bit more in depth. So this is the first command after the Ten Commandments. What is this? Interesting. That you have seen me, right? Because Hashem opened up the heavens and they had these visions, as we just said. And now Hashem is concerned that we will want to make a replica of something that we have seen. So that's the simple meaning. So he says, do not do that. We have just been commanded in the Ten Commandments about this, right? This was the second of the Ten Commandments. So it's interesting that it seems to be a repetition. So let's see Rashi first, 19, back to page 242 on the bottom part where it says 19 Rashi. So first we said Kaisaimar, exactly in this language. Atem Re'isem, you have seen. So he says, Yesh Hefrish, Bein Ma Sha'adam Roye, There is a very big difference between that which a person sees and that which others tell him. For regarding that which somebody else tells you, sometimes you can hesitate to believe. Again, reiterating, interesting, even though this is really part of the command, but it's not just that you heard somebody tell you. You actually saw. And if you saw, then it's ingrained in you that you have one God and only one God, and that all of the Ten Commandments come directly from Hashem. Nobody can convince you otherwise because you saw it by yourself. Okay, this is what the Rashi says is stressed here, why it says, Atem Re'isem. But then it goes on and it says, Ki min hashamayim dibarti, and this is interesting words. What did you see? You saw that from the heavens I spoke to you. What does it mean, from the heavens I spoke to you? So here we have an interesting thing. So first Rashi says, it means, sounds like Hashem, it's like we're down here, and Hashem's voice, or he opens up the heavens, and we saw Hashem somewhere up high, And that's where he spoke to us from. But we know from other psukim that other things seem to have happened at Matan Torah, such as, let's see what Rashi says. So he says, this seems to contradict, because he says, because of Echad Oimer, Vayered Hashem al Har Sinai. I remember we read this at the beginning of the Ten Commandments, just before the Aseres Adibis. It says that Hashem descended upon Har Sinai. Here it sounds like Hashem is speaking from high up in the heavens. There it sounds like Hashem came down to the mountain. So where is Hashem speaking from? The heavens or from the top of the mountain? Where is it coming from? Okay, so here Rashi says like this. The famous thing, Bahakosav Ashlishi Vihriya Bainayim. So we have a third pasuk, and that will give peace. That will help us put both of them together, that they're not a contradiction, but they work together. What is the third pasuk? So the third pasuk says, Min Hashamayim Hishmiacha es Kailai Liasrecha. So from the heavens he made his voice heard so that he can rebuke you. Va'al ha'aretz Her acha es ishay hagdaila, and on earth he showed you his great fire. So it's interesting that the voice seems to be coming from both places, from the heavens and from the earth. And we know Hashem is obviously not bound to one place. So we heard or saw from a few. It was like from heaven and from earth. Hashem was all places simultaneously speaking to us. That's one way to explain it. But there is another way. This is interesting. The other way is the more famous way, the second opinion of Rashi. And he says, Davar Acher, so alternatively, another explanation. Hirkin Hashamayim Ushmei Hashamayim. He bent the heavens and the heaven of the heavens. And what did he do with them? V'hitzian al hahar. And he spread them over the mountains, which means, this is a beautiful explanation, nowadays, you know, with all technology and the way they show movies, so we could almost picture it. So it's like everything sort of bent together. The heavens came down to earth, the earth came up to heaven, and it all merged. And Hashem was speaking from the heavens, but it was on the mountain. That's what happened at Har Sinai. It's an interesting thing. What does this really mean? Just want to finish reading the Rashi, as he says, V'chein hu emer ve'et shemayim ve'yered, that likewise he says he spent the heavens and he descended. Why? What's the point of that? Why did he have to bend the heavens and descend? Why couldn't we just open the heavens and see Hashem up there? What's the problem? Because this is based on what we've already said, and I'm not going to say it in too much length, because we've already mentioned this. This is the whole purpose of Matan Torah. The whole purpose of the giving of the Torah is not only that we know what to do and follow that's one of the big things, to follow the mitzvahs, but it's much deeper than that. We know that at Matan Torah the world changed, totally changed. What changed? There was no more separation between heaven and earth. Physically, but obviously much deeper spiritually. Until then, there was a realm called spiritual, and there was a realm called physical, and they never met, okay? They always remained what they were. If you were physical, you remained physical. Spiritual, you were spiritual. As the famous example, even when you did a mitzvah with something, you didn't actually make the physical thing holy. You used it for the mitzvah, but then you could just throw it out. Like this piece of chumash would be, you can throw it out. Now we can't anymore. Now we have to bury it. Now when we use a lulav, an esreg, a talis, everything that we use for a mitzvah, even though originally it was just a simple physical thing, we actually have the ability to elevate it. Where does that come from? From Matan Torah. How? Because what did Hashem do? He took his spirituality and he took the physicality and he made them meet and touch each other, so to speak, and mix them up, if you want to say, to the point where they are not separate anymore. There isn't this divide. That's a massive shift in the whole creation.
Now I understand why I understand that comes from
It's true. It's true. Once something is used for holiness, we have to be very careful with it. Yeah, keep reusing. Holy things are holy, right? As we say. And this is an incredible power that we have. It's an amazing thing. This is the purpose of creation.
So with the shattering of the vessels and the sparks of holiness, which happens
That's right, that's right.
How were they impacted?
Okay, so the truth is, it's a very interesting question, because we do say that we did elevate in Mitzrayim. They were given an opportunity, but the difference is that you might have been able to release a spark which was originally holy, but you weren't able to transform something which was created as physical into something godly. That only happened at Matan Torah. And this is unique to the mitzvahs that we do now. That's why we say that our mitzvahs are very different to the mitzvahs that the forefathers did, right? That's the difference. So yeah, the sparks are there, and that's what enables us actually to elevate everything. It's true. But up until then, it wasn't the same way. We couldn't actually transform. Now we actually transform after Matan Torah. So yeah, this is an amazing thing. Yes?
Another question. Matan Torah, and then it disappeared. And then we are stuck with what?
So it didn't. So Leah, that's a good question, because it didn't really disappear. That's the point. Once Hashem descended, there's no going back. Everything changed. The only thing that disappeared is that there is blockages, like we don't see it in a revealed way, but the impact is still there. You understand? We can
still. I understand, but how can you explain this to other people that it was thousands of years ago? Not anymore.
Okay, so it's an interesting question. So I think that we nowadays not so hard to explain. So there's two things. There's two aspects. One aspect is the fact that we were all there. That's a very important one, because as we say, we all saw. Yeah. Okay, so but then people still say, but I don't remember, right? Yeah. Okay, but that's one important thing. But the other important thing is, it's just like in, you might say, any natural thing. Let's just say if there was an earthquake somewhere, right? The earth changes afterwards, and sometimes the properties actually change, right? Something will grow that wouldn't have grown before. Yeah. So here also, there was a spiritual, whatever you want to call it, change. And from then, everything is changed. So let's say you might say that it was a field that before wasn't able to be planted. Now it is able to be planted. Do you understand? So Leia, yeah, it's true that it still needs work. Right? So you don't see the things growing by itself, but you can plant it. This is the difference. Things literally changed completely. You know, it's interesting because when people study, I don't know what, I forgot what it's called, what that science is called, but when you study how the world, you know, everything, and they study all the different natural disasters and all the events that happen throughout the years, okay, so they say that's much bigger, longer, but even if you look at it in a Torah way, you learn about the Mabel, you learn about all the different things, the world has changed. There's no question that the properties have changed. That's a fact. That's why we say, that's why some people will say that. Remember, Debbie was saying at the convention, do you remember she was saying how bread was the staple in the time of the Gemara? So that people say now bread maybe is not so healthy, because the truth is we don't know. Maybe the bread is, the wheat is different. Whatever it is, things do change and evolve, and people change and evolve. And the reason it's like that physically is because it's like that spiritually. And the whole world is changing, because we're really nearing to time of Mashiach. So it's really changing. But where did it begin? At Matan Torah. Yeah. So this is a massive thing. It's a very important part. Okay, so then, but leading on from this, then Hashem says, then Hashem continues and he tells Moshe Rabbeinu an interesting command. What is the command? So he says that you shall not make images of what is with me. Okay, so why would we want to make images? Well, because we saw Hashem, we want to make something that looks like God. So on a simple level, some people say this is like not making, you know, as we said at the beginning, you know, the sun, the moon, all the things that we would have seen in the heavens, or pictures of the angels, or whatever it may be, in real, not pictures, but, you know, in real. Okay, so let's see, Rashi says, HaMishamshim Lefanai Bamarim, so this is on page 243, you shall not make an image of my servants who serve before me on high. And who are those servants? So they say, like, the heavenly bodies. You can say all the things that work with Hashem in the heavenly spheres. You shall not make a replica of them. That's what we know. There are many halachas as far as that. But then the pasuk continues very interesting, because here it's a little bit more, it's interesting how it details what kind and what type of things specifically. So he says, Elekei Kesef, gods of silver. What does Rashi tell us? Bo lahazir al hakruvim sha'ata oisel amait iti. This is very interesting. In the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mishkan, you know, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in the Holy of Holies, on top of the Arayin, this was a fascinating thing. We had those kruvim, right, those images of two children, whatever it was, and they are really images. So it's an interesting thing that you're allowed to make that. only in the Mishkan, only exactly as prescribed by Hashem. If you take that part of the Chumash and you decide you want to make a Kruvim in your house or in your shul, not allowed. Another thing, you cannot make it any, good morning, in any different way, it's nice to see you, Elda, in any different way than was made in the Mishkan. How was it made? Out of gold. You cannot make it out of silver if you decide to make it out of silver. No. Interestingly, the Kruvim seem to have more strict halachas than other things, because with other vessels, if you don't have gold, so you could make it out of silver, so you don't have that material, you are permitted. But the Kruvim, because it's such an image, I guess, so we have to follow exact guidelines, and only then is it permissible to be made exactly where Hashem said, and where Hashem said, and only for that place. So it's interesting. That's what Rashi says. This is what this is referring to. That's what he says. That is, Shelo Yeh Shel Keser shouldn't be made out of silver, because if you change it and you make it out of silver, then it's like a false god. That's what Hashem says. Then he says, Vele Kezav. What is that? So he says, Bo Lahazer Shelo Yosef Al Shnayim. This is that you should not add, as we say, adding. You shouldn't add more kruvim. You shouldn't make three, let's say. She'im asisa arba, if you made four, harehein, lefanai keleke zahav. Then it's as if you have made a false god of gold. We're going to come back to it in a minute to see what else this means. But just to finish the Rashi, loisasu lachem, you shall not make for yourselves. Loisaymar hareini oisek kruvim bebatei knesiyais, bebatei medrashais, right? You shouldn't make it for yourself, meaning wherever you choose. I want to make it in a shul, I want to make it in a house of study, because it's going to, you know, it's something that's going to inspire me. No, it's not permissible. Like Kederach Shani Aysa Bebeis Eilamim, like I make in the Beis HaMikdash. L'kach Nemar, L'Isasu Lachem, that's why it says you shall not make it for yourself. Just before we go on to the next command, it's something very beautiful that I saw, that what this pasuk means. It's a very interesting thing. It says like this, that when we received the Torah at Har Sinai and Hashem revealed himself, I want to see who said it. It's actually, this is from the Rambam in Meir Nevuchim. He says a beautiful thing. So he says that you were totally like, you saw Hashem. So every doubt was removed. It was just Hashem, and you believed and you saw, and everything was clear. There was absolute clarity. But then, and then we say an interesting thing. Now he says, but now that the heavens closed, so to speak, as Leah says, and now you can't see it anymore, now comes the big test. Are you going to continue and follow what Hashem commanded you? What you saw so clearly before, will you now continue to have that as something very, very clear and something absolute? So he says like this, a very interesting thing. First of all, will you love Hashem? Will you want to do his mitzvahs? And then the Rambam continues and he says, this is also talking to the future, to us, to the distant future. That when Hashem opens up the heavens, he wanted you to see him clearly with no doubts, right, as we say. Now, I want to show you something over here. Let me see how this, over here, sorry, I just want to see to this part, with specifically this passage. I want to show you something beautiful. Then he says like this, when you're talking about loy sa'asun elekim, that you should not make with me a god, we're going to see it in the next parsha. This actually will continue into the next parsha. Mm-hmm. Elekim is a god. But Elekim also in Torah is used for judges. Many times judges are called Elekim because they, as we know, Elekim is the god of justice. They actually execute and are able to enforce, or and not enforce specifically, but are able to teach us the laws that Hashem taught us. So over here we can interchange and we can say, when we're talking about not to make a god with me and not to make out of gold or silver, what does it mean? So it says a very interesting thing, that when you appoint judges, do not consider whether they are wealthy or not wealthy. Even though preferably, it is preferable to have judges who are wealthy because then they won't accept bribes. But that shouldn't be what makes you choose them as judges, because we do not look up to wealth. Wealth is not something that makes or breaks a person. What's the most important thing is if they know the law well and if they're God-fearing. So that's one important thing that we see from here. The other thing that it says is also, do not worship materialism, which is symbolized by idols of gold and silver. And that's what he says. I'll just tell you in English, the pasuk in Iyov, it says, have I made gold my hope? Have I said to the fine gold, you are my confidence? So that's what he's saying over here also. Make sure that the materialism doesn't become something that becomes your God, so to speak. And also, a very interesting thing, Rabbi Akiva says in the Medrash, a beautiful thing, he says, how do other nations treat their gods, so to speak? They treat them that when things are going well, so to speak, when their gods are doing exactly as they want, well, then everything's wonderful. Then they bless them and they're, you know, wonderful. I want to follow exactly. But when things are not so great, well, then they curse them. I mean, we don't want that God. So he says that here he's telling you, you should serve God no matter what. It doesn't matter if it's wealthy, if it's not wealthy, if it's good, if it's bad. He's your God consistently. And it doesn't make a difference, so to speak, how he is treating you. So that's another important thing. The other thing, there was another one, I think, over here. I just want to see. Okay. That's all for this pasuk, I think. Okay, let's go on now to the next one. Yes, sure.
I'm not quite sure. What was the purpose of the
kruvim?
Explain it to us.
Oh, okay, so that's its own. No, it's true. The kruvim is an interesting one, because that really we should really do more if we get, I don't know, if we'll do parshas. It's parshas Truma and Tetzaveh when you do about the Mishkan. So the truth is that Sylvia really is its own shir, and I can't tell you on. I'm not going to answer because I'm not going to.
It's huge.
Yes, it is huge, and I'm not. Yeah. But there's a very fascinating medrash how when they destroyed, you know, they faced each other. Yes. And when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, you would have thought that they would be, because apparently when Hashem was angry, they would not face each other. But at the time of the destruction, they actually were facing each other. It's very interesting. It says it shows that Hashem loved us unconditionally. But there's a lot of interesting things, because how could they not face it if they're gold? Or, I mean, how would they move? But it was a miraculous kind of a thing. But yeah. So that's what we think. So that's why it could only be prescribed. Who made them? Well, Bezalel made them originally, you know, when they made the Mishkan. Yes, at the time of... They were holy, special. They weren't idols, no. They weren't considered idols. They were specific. They were one of the vessels of the Mishkan, of the Beis HaMikdash, yeah.
They made a museum right by the Kotel, and it's got all the Beit HaMikdash.
And they have the Kruvim there.
The Kruvim, and the Aron, they have the Mizbeach, they have...
And what did they make the Kruvim out of there?
I don't know, it was gold, but yeah, I don't know if it was gold-plated or gold.
Yeah, it's interesting.
And it was gold, and it's got all the beams all coming out.
Wow.
First is the curtain, and then you see that it's poking out like exactly what it used to be. And then it opens up, and you see the...
So it's amazing.
They made it exactly the measurement they used to be.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Now, Vincent, can I ask you, okay, so in our homes we don't have direct representation. When did the concept of mezuzah come about? Because that's in our homes, and that's the representation.
No, but it's not. It's a verse. But that's
that
in the Chumash. It says, it says it that you should have it on the. That's directly from the. It would have been even in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, possibly.
So even in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu,
yeah,
they had them as.
I would imagine so. It's a biblical.
That's right.
And exactly right. Yeah. They would have already had it. Yes. To mezuzah, that's right. And as Daisy says, even if that comes all the way from Mitzrayim, Hashem passing over, you know. So that's what, the mezuzah is different because the mezuzah is like a parchment, so we don't think of it as an image.
No.
You know, it just has the psukim.
Yeah,
it's
just that it happens to be covered.
Yeah.
But initially it
wasn't necessarily, but we cover for protection. Yeah, we don't want the weather to, yeah. Yeah, well, that's right, exactly. All the way from there we have 100%. Okay, let's see the next pasuk. Then it continues. So the first thing is not to make these images. Then we go on. And what's the next repetition, so to speak, if you wanted to, what we emphasize? This is not really a repetition, but this is a continuation. And here, these are the last two psukim of the parasha. It says, so this is on page 243, Mizbeach Adama Ta'aseli, right? Mizbeach Adama. So you should make for me an altar of earth. Vizavachta olav, and you shall slaughter. Well, it says olav, which literally is on it, but we know Rashi tells us we don't slaughter on the mizbeach. we actually shecht near the Mizbeach. So what should we do? Es Eilei Secha. So it's talking about all the different sacrifices, all the different karbanos, the Eilei offering, Ves Shlamecha, and your peace offering, Ves Tzoncha, and your sheep, Ves Bekarcha, and your cattle, Bechol HaMakai Masher Asker Es Shmi, every place where I will mention my name, Avoy Eilecha Ubeirachticha, I shall come to you and I will bless you. I just want to read one more pasuk. So this is talking about a mizbeach. It's interesting, of all things, the altar where we're going to bring sacrifices. And it says that wherever I will mention my name, which is an interesting thing, it doesn't say where you will mention my name. Where I will mention my name, it's interesting, we'll see in a minute why, I will bless you. Then it says, so originally we're talking about an altar made of earth, it says, right? That's what it says. Then it says, "Im mizbach avonim tasali." And if you make an altar of stones, it's not if, when, actually Rashi will tell us, when you make an altar of stones, that will be in the actual Beis HaMikdash, "Loi sivne es hen gazis," you shall not build them with like these cut stones, "Ki charbecha hey nafta aleha," because you will have to wave, that's right, you will have to wave your sword, which is metal, we'll see soon, "Vatechal aleha," and defile it. The last pasuk says, "Veloi sa'ale b'malais," again something to do with the mizbeach, you shall not ascend with steps, "al mizbechi," on my altar, "asher loy sigala ervascha olav," so that you shall not reveal your nakedness upon it. Okay, what is it talking about? It's very strange. This, let's not forget, is the end of Parshas Yisrael, which is the Parsha of the Torah. It's a funny ending. Talking specifically seems, on a simple level, about an altar. Okay, it's true, we will have an altar, but why are we talking about an altar here? Where does it come in? And why these specific halachas of the altar? So we have to understand first simply and then a little bit deeper. So firstly, to understand the psukim. So going back to page 243, so it says a mizbach adama. Why? First it says a altar which is of earth, and then it talks about an altar of stone, right? We said altar earth, altar stone. What are these two altars? So just to understand that originally we had the Mishkan, the tabernacle, which was the temporary place in the desert. In the desert, when they traveled for 40 years, they had a mizbeach that actually it was covered with copper, but the inside was hollow. And according to Rashi, what they would do is when they were camping, they would fill the inside with earth. So it was called a mizbeach adama.
It's not really earth, it's sand, no?
Yeah, whatever it's, I know, in the desert, the sand. So yeah, adama, maybe that's right. So let's see, but Rashi actually says another reason why it's called mizbeach adama. So he says, mechubar ba'adama, attached to the earth. What is attached? It wasn't attached because they moved it, but attached means shelo yivnenu al gabe amudim or al gabe basis. You should not build it upon pillars or on a base. In other words, it should be directly on the ground. There should be nothing separating between the altar and the ground. The mizbeach has to be directly. That's one explanation. I said davar acher shehaya memaleis chalul mizbeach hanachayshes adama b'shas chaniyason. They would fill it, as we said, this copper altar, not the golden one, but the copper one where they brought the sacrifices. They would fill it with earth when they camped. So this is just a very simple halacha. I mean, whatever, but then we'll a minute understand what's the significance. Taseli shetehitchilas asiyosay lishmi. Very interesting. This is, we'll find later when, if you learn about the different things which were made for the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash, that you have to make them with the right intention. We have that nowadays also when we write a mezuzah, you write tefillin, but you have to do it with the intention that it's for a mitzvah. So when you build the altar, you cannot start by building something in the house and saying, oh, I want to donate this. No, it has to be built with the intention that this is for the Mishkan. Okay, that's what Ta'aseli means in a simple level. I just want to see what this is, v'zavachta, and you shall slaughter. So we said, Allah is not on it, but near it, because you do not shecht upon it. And then I just want to see, let's just look at that one, the Rashi, that tells us about the fact that b'chol ha'mokai masher askir es shmi, in every place where I will mention my name. So he says a very interesting thing that we learned from here. What does it mean in every place, I will mention my name, I will bless you? You would imagine it would be more whenever the Jewish people want to mention Hashem's name, then Hashem will bless them, like when we daven, when we learn. But it doesn't mean that, because he says a beautiful thing. So he says, b'chol ha'mokim, so he says, asher eten l'cha rishus, lahaskir es shem ha'mefayresh shali. Wherever I give you permission to mention my explicit name. Sham Avay Lecho Berachticha. There I shall come to you and bless you. So he says, Ashre Shechinasi, what will be the blessing? That I will rest my Shechina upon you. Mikana Talamit, from here we learn, Shalai Nitan Rishus Lahaske Shem HaMefayrash, Ella b'makayim shehashchina ba'asham. Very interesting. When we want to mention the secret name of Hashem, like the Kaihanim used to do when they would bless us, first the Shechina would come, then they would be able to say Hashem's special name, and then it would reveal the blessings of God. So it's interesting, Hashem was there first. It's interesting. And then you can actually say his name. Fascinating thing that Hashem comes in a sense first, and he says, where was that? Only in the Beis HaBchira. Obviously, there was specifically in the Beis HaMikdash where Hashem was constantly revealed. As he says, Sham Nitan Rishus L'Kahanim L'Haska Shem HaMefayresh. That's where they were given permission to use that special name of Hashem. You cannot use that secret name of Hashem somewhere else, only in the holiest place. So that's what we learn from here, where it says, I will mention my name. It's very interesting. And he says, that's what we as with Rashi says, B'nesiyas kapayim l'varach ha'am, when they raise their hands to bless the people. I just wanted to see why, before we go further, just a simple little lesson, and we'll see a little bit deeper, this idea of the Mizbeach Adoma, that it's a Mizbeach that has to be directly on the ground. Why? What's the idea of not having a separation between the ground and the Mizbeach? So it's explained something very beautiful, that we're following, let's not forget, we're following our whole inspiration, our elevation at Har Sinai. We've been elevated, Hashem has been so revealed to us. There is a little bit of a danger that can take place there. When a person has experienced such an incredible spiritual elevation, unfortunately, not on purpose, but it can lead to a little bit of arrogance, where a person can feel higher, better, more special than the rest of the world, if you want to say. Right away, Hashem says, no separation. The Mizbeach has to lay directly on the ground. Don't forget where you come from. You are made of earth, okay? And you are not better or more than anything else on this earth. You have more responsibility, massive. Now you have to take your inspiration and you have to elevate the rest of the earth with you. But do not think that you can stay higher and stand on something above. It's quite an incredible juxtaposition right away. Okay, so that's very, very important thing, and we'll see this lesson will come so strongly in the next thing. So now, what does he say in the next thing? So we said they have to make this, in Mizbeach has to also, when they come into the Beis HaMikdash, we said they will make a stone one. So first of all, the im. I just wanted, this is just a general rule of the Torah. Im in Hebrew is if. So you think it's a choice. If means if you want, if you don't want. But we have a very famous rule that in the Torah there are three ims, three times where it says im, which sounds like if, but they don't mean if, they mean when. This is not a choice. Why it uses that word, it's a different question. But the bottom line is we know we cannot translate it as if. What are those three? So Rashi tells us this time, because we will have to make a permanent Mizbeach when we build the Beis HaMikdash. We will not have a temporary Mizbeach then. We will have a permanent one. And then, the interesting thing is it will be so permanent that then we will not be permitted to bring sacrifices anywhere except for there, right? That's the difference that happens after we build the Beis HaMikdash. Up until then, we can sometimes bring sacrifices on a temporary altar. But so im is here. So what's the other two ims? So one of them is im kesef talve es ha'ani, right? If, it sounds like if you will lend money, there's no choice. When a Jew comes to borrow money, you can't say, I can't. You have to, I mean, unless you don't have. But if you have, you have to lend him. It's not if, it's when. And also it says it by the mitzvah of Bikurim. It says, I forgot, what's the pasuk? V'im takriv minchas Bikurim. And it's not a choice. We have to bring the Bikurim. Those are the first fruits that we're thanking Hashem for. It's not if, it's when. When you will do it. So again, very interesting, very much of a stress to be careful. Now we come to what's interesting. We're going to come to two beautiful Rashis here. It's so interesting because it's not the typical Rashi. two magnificent Rashis which finish the Parshas Yisrei. And it's funny because almost out of context, if you want to say, to the whole concept. Okay,
this,
so yes, sure.
The structure of Mizbeach, so it was just a structure. It had no covers. Later on, they put the covers. In the frying pans.
Oh, what do you mean by that?
Like, because before it never had a cover. Mm-hmm.
Because over here, the truth is,
see the earth inside.
It's very interesting, yeah. Isn't it interesting? So, because when they were traveling,
right.
And not everybody agrees, though. To be honest, this is Rashi's opinion. The Rambam says no, so I don't know. Opinion as far as that's the truth. It's interesting because I know what you're asking. Yeah. So other opinions say there wasn't. Rashi says it must be based on the Gemara. There's a whole discussion of how they did it, but it was different when they traveled than when they finally came to the permanent. Yeah. Yes, so that's in Parshas Truma. It discusses exactly the measurements of all the different kelim, and exactly how to build. We're going to learn one more detail about it, as we said. We don't make steps, but we'll see in a minute. And you don't cut with iron. Two things: no iron and no steps. Why those two things? Let's see why are they important to mention here. And also, we have to understand why the Mizbeach is mentioned here altogether, right? So we'll see that soon. That really continues into Parshas Mishpatim. But I just want to show you two important Rashis. So let's see. If you look into the Rashi on the bottom of page 245, this is a very important Rashi. Vatechaleleha. Do you see it's the last Rashi on the page. And defile it, it says. Vatechaleleha. What does it mean, and defile it? If you use metal, like an iron, to cut the stone. So he says, halamadata, hence you have learned. She'im he'nafta aleha barzel, that if you waved iron over it, chilalta, you have defiled it. She'hamizbeach nivra laharich yomav shel adam, because the mizbeach was created to lengthen man's life. V'habarzel nivra lekatzer yomav shel adam, and the iron was created to shorten man's life. Ein zebedin, so it doesn't make sense that what should you have? Sheyunaf hamikatzer al hamarich, that you should wave, so to speak, that which shortens over that which lengthens. This is a very beautiful Rashi. You do not even cut the stones. It's an interesting thing. So with an iron, because this is such the Mizbeach, as on a simple level, a Mizbeach is where you bring a sacrifice, you connect to Hashem. Leah's Karev, to come close to God. That's where you connect to God. That's where you get your atonement, so you can live longer, so you can be connected. Here we're talking about something which separates you, right? Which causes death. Obviously, it doesn't go together. And he says a very beautiful thing. Iron, why does iron defile the stones? Because the Mizbeach makes peace between Israel and their Father in heaven. Therefore, that which cuts and injures should not come over it. And what does this mean? This is such an incredible Rashi, he says. So we think, okay, very nice, this is the Mizbeach, but this is something for each and every one of us. So he says, V'harei, Dvarim Kal V'Chomer. You know what a Kal V'Chomer? How much more so? So he says, Uma Avonim. Stones, she'einon royas, that don't see, v'loy shemas, and don't hear, v'loy medabras, and don't speak, right? They're inanimate objects. And what do? Al yidei shematila shalom, but because they make peace, amra teira loy sonif aleihem barzel, so the Torah says you should not wave iron over them. Hamatil shalom bein ish leishtai, somebody who makes peace between a man and his wife, bein mishpacha lemishpacha, between one family and another, bein adam lechaveire, between one man and another, alachas kama vekama, shalai sivi'ehu puranus, there will not be punishment, no iron will come to them. If we don't put iron on a stone of the Mizbeach, which is so symbolic, definitely, and because it increases peace between us and Hashem, if we busy ourselves by trying to make peace between people, well, definitely not causing any conflict, what will that be? Definite, we are assured there will be no iron in our life, so to speak. Nothing that will cut short. Nothing that will do harm, damage, and cause pain. Quite an interesting Kal V'Chomer, as Rashi says, to be learned. Why does he say this over here? It's like a bit far-fetched. Again, the connection to why it's right after the giving of the Torah. We see already, this is the one, we'll see in a minute the next one. The giving of the Torah is a very spiritual experience. As we explained just before these psukim, they were elevated to the most incredible level. They were like angels beyond that, as we said, mamish. And there was no Yetzihara. The world was the purest place. So we could think, in many levels, we could think that that's what we're meant to be. We are meant to be like angels. I'm not saying we're not. But on the level where we're so separate from this world, right? We're on the level where nothing matters except for our spiritual growth. And anything that might stand in the way of our spiritual growth, well, we can just step all over it, or we can do anything just to grow. Here the Torah tells us straight away, brings us right back down to earth immediately. First of all, never be arrogant. Second of all, remember the whole purpose of the Torah is to bring peace to the world. That's what it says. Torah is shalom. Torah is peace. If the purpose of the Torah and your experience of Matan Torah is to bring peace, that means practically that when we get any spiritual elevation, as we mentioned last week, every time we learn Torah, we are re-experiencing Matan Torah, we should be able to leave from that with more peace, not conflict. Peace between each other, peace within ourselves, peace within our family. Torah has to lead to peace. Yes, there are halachas that have to be kept. Nobody says not. But you have to work on it to see how you do it in the most peaceful way. That's such an important part. And that's why right away it mentions this halacha. Then I want to show you the next halacha. This is very interesting. Because the next, yes. So it's interesting. They didn't make it yet. They're just giving the halacha.
Because they cut it only
after. Exactly. Oh, okay. So that's an interesting question. So, but this mizbeach in the, that's right. So in the, but in the midbar, they will soon be making it by Bezalel. He's going to make the mizbeach. But here we're giving the command for this mizbeach. No, it wasn't. It wasn't. That's right. Only in the Beis HaMikdash it was from Avanim. That's right. Yeah, from Nechayshas covered wood. It was wood covered with Nechayshas, right? So, yeah. Okay, so here it's not such a problem. It's only when you get to the stone ones.
So how did they cut the Nechayshas?
So the Nechayshas is not as hard. It must have melted it, I imagine. Oh. You would have, yeah, they would have had a process to do. So see, that's why over here it's not a problem.
So fire
is allowed, but not the iron. It's symbolic, obviously. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, it's very interesting. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, but we see iron is like the symbolism of weaponry, if you want to say. It's yeah. always, you know.
It's harder, probably.
Hard, yeah. Yeah, it is, it's all over, it's even hard, in and everything. It, that's the, yeah, that's what,
so
that's
maybe
what it
is. Why the stone peace?
Why do we have stone?
No, so, why is it peace? Peace?
No, so he says, okay, so what? So it's interesting, because the Mizbeach, when it was built in the Beis HaMikdash, was made of stone. But it wasn't made of stones that you can actually cut. You had to find, I guess they found stones that were the right shape, if you want to say. And then if it was needed to be fixed a little bit, you definitely didn't use iron. You would use a different material that was softer than iron. So you couldn't really, it wouldn't be as beautiful in a sense. And also, iron would have been used if they wanted to engrave things on it. So they couldn't engrave anything on it. Certain things you could only do with iron, but that wasn't allowed. So it's interesting.
But the rams anyway, they had to cut it.
Cut, I know. I don't know how they did that. I'm not sure if the ramp was part of them, is considered, but let's see. I don't know. No, the ramp was made together.
Yes,
it's part of it, for sure.
But it was separate.
Separate. It was a separate piece, definitely. Right? It says it was like put to, yeah,
yes.
It was a separate piece to the Mizbeah. It's an interesting thing, the whole. I know those videos. You remember you've seen, you can see it's amazing.
It's so massive.
Is it? You saw it? It's Take. Wow. Okay, so let's see Take about the ramp. Now we have to understand why can't you make steps? Why a ramp? Okay, so it's very modern, right? It's
people with sore knees.
So let's see what's the reason Ria the Torah gives why no steps on the Mizbeach to go up for the Kohanim. So he says, you shall not ascend with steps. So he says, Kesha'ata baina keves la Mizbeach. Kevesh, so when you make this ramp, Laisaseyu Mailais Mailais, do not make it with steps, ascending levels, as we say. Ela chalak yehei umushpa, as we say, sorry, umushupa is how you say it. Rather, it should be smooth and inclined. Why? So the Torah gave a reason. It says, Asher Laisigala Ervascha, because he explains like this. when the Kohanim would walk up, so if you walk on steps, he says, Sha'al Yudeya Mailos, Atatzorech Laharchiv, Psiyay Secha. If you go on steps, then you have to lift your leg higher. That's how a step works. And when you lift your leg higher, Afal Pi She'enay Gluya Erva Mamish. So you could think then that perhaps you will uncover some parts of the body that should be covered. But the truth is, it's a funny thing, because the Kohanim had pants. They weren't just wearing a robe. We all know that was one of their clothing. So they had these mechnasayim underneath. So what's the problem? There doesn't seem to be any problem with steps. So we see this is why the lesson is even stronger. Okay, so let's see what he says. So even though it's not really an actual exposure, so he says, because you shall make for them linen pants. Nevertheless, he says, Mikol Makim, Harchavas Hapsiais Karev Legiloy Ervo. Taking wide steps is close to exposing nakedness. That's what it is. So it's a more, it's a less, how do you say, refined way.
Because you're actually standing underneath the steps. That's, and you see what's above you.
That's interesting, huh? It's interesting. So you see how
when
it's...
When you're standing underneath, you actually can see the dirt, yeah.
It's like nowadays some of the modern house, like you see that they have these steps that don't have a... Yes, you see. I was so nervous. Anyway, whatever. Everybody has different tastes. I'm just saying stuff. It doesn't matter. But it's just sometimes, so you can. You're right. You can see. Anyways, but... whatever it is. Anyway, so he says, but in the Mizbeim, he doesn't talk about homes here. He talks about the Beis HaMikdash. I don't have to extend it to other people. This is the Mizbeah. So he says like this, but what's really the lesson for us? The lesson is incredible, he says. So what are you doing? He's saying, Mikol Makim. Okay, so he says, Va'ata noyeg bam minhag bizayin. And if you're taking wide steps, you're treating the stones of the Mizbeah in a humiliating manner. Interesting. We're not even talking about other people. We're talking about the steps, the stupid steps of, I mean, like the pieces of metal, whatever they might be made of, stone, whatever. No, why do we care? It doesn't see, it doesn't feel, it doesn't anything. And yet it would be treating that with humiliation. In other words, not with dignity. Because if you are able to be uncovered, it means you're not treating it with dignity. So he says, if that's the case, how much more so? This is a phenomenal thing, he says. V'harei dvarim kal v'chaymer, again, a kal v'chaymer. How much more so? U'ma'avonim halalu, she'ein bohem da'as lahakpid al bizyaynan. These stones which do not have perception to care about their humiliation. Amra ta'ira ha'yal v'yesh behem tzayrech le'sinag behem minag bizyayin. Since there's a need for them, do not treat them in a humiliating manner. So he says, how much more so? Chavercha, Shehu bidmus yaitzercha, your friend who's created in the image of Hashem, umakpid al bizyayna, and does care if he's humiliated, alachas kama v'kama, how much more so must you treat him with respect? This is the last Rashi in Chumash Parshas Yisrael. Imagine how Rashi finishes. The parsha of the giving of the Torah is all about treating somebody else with respect. On a simple level, the reason why he mentions this here is because we said we shouldn't take we shouldn't use a medal, right, for the stones. So then you might think that the Mizbeach, and also the Adama you're going to stuff it with, so you might think that the Mizbeach won't be as beautiful. So therefore, if it's not so beautiful, so you might think in a way you don't have to treat it with such respect. So here he's showing you that just because you don't use iron doesn't mean that you don't have to treat it with the utmost respect, right? It has to be done in the best way possible. But then, obviously, as Rashi says, the lesson is really for us. And this is, again, the incredible thing of the giving of the Torah. The whole Parshas Yisrael, what does it start with and what does it end with? It's dignity and respect, peace between people. It's incredible to think that that's how the Torah is. But of course, what the Torah is telling us, and this is also very powerful, goes both ways. The only way that we will have peace between people, the only way we will truly treat somebody else with dignity and respect, is if we follow the Torah. So the Torah goes hand in hand. Both things go together, and in a way they measure each other, in a sense, you can assess. If you're not being respectful of others, you're missing in your learning of Torah. If you're learning Torah, and you understand it goes both ways, you have to learn more Torah. If you're not treating others with respect, then your Torah is not being learned properly. Something is wrong. So it goes together. It's actually hand in hand. not separable at all, at all, at all. And this is an amazing thing, and it leads to the next parsha. This is why Parshas Mishpatim follows immediately Parshas Yisrael. The big question. Mishpatim is the parsha of laws, simple laws, how to treat your slave, how to, you know, pay back damages, all the simple laws that we say, not simple, they're complex, but laws between man and man, laws that are logical, intellectual, you know, the societal laws. Weird, why? Wouldn't you imagine that following this amazing inspiration of the giving of the Torah, we would have spiritual laws? We would have the Beis HaMikdash, immediately maybe the Mishkan. No, because the Torah's purpose, as we say, is to affect this world. So it actually, as we said, it goes, but it goes both ways. The only way to live in this world properly with the correct ethical, moral laws is with the Torah. So it goes together. It's an incredible, incredible combination. And that's why it flows immediately. It's quite a powerful, powerful thing. I just want to make sure if I haven't forgotten something important. Okay, I just want to see something, because I'm sure I have. Before we move on. Oh, okay. Just one cute thing, a small thing, it says, that when you, some people have a minig, I don't know if it's a minig or if it's actually halacha, it says that when you bench, you cover the knives at the table. And where do you get that from? From here. Because you shouldn't have iron on the mizbeach. The table's like a mizbeach. So you need the knife to eat the food, but then when it's time for the bench, either take it off or cover it. You take it off. Not on Shabbos. Shabbos is a time of peace, no problem, right? But in the weekday, yes. Okay. I just wanted to see if there was one more important thing. Okay. Yeah, as we say, so also the interesting thing is, as we said, that you're going to make a simple altar of earth, but because Hashem says he doesn't care about gold and silver, it's not the material, it's more the heart and the, you know, the soul that you serve him with. But that doesn't mean, alternatively, as we say, it shouldn't mean that we should treat the altar lightly, as you said. So that's why you have to be careful both ways. You can, it doesn't have to be perfect in the material sense, but you treat it with dignity and respect. So it's a very important thing. I just wanted to see if there was anything else. Okay. Yes. Okay, now we're going to come and we'll see this more next week, something very interesting. I'll just tell you quickly this one orally, and then we're going to go afterwards. We said it's not steps, but it's an incline, right? It's a ramp. Why a ramp? So one of the reasons is you shouldn't take big steps. But the other reason is also very connected to Mishpatim. Because Mishpatim means laws. And we're talking about the judges, really, who are going to, well, us and the judges have to learn the laws. But you have to be able to implement all the judgments and everything. When a judge sits by a court of law, a lot of times he can be inclined, especially after he has a lot of experience, and let's say something has come before him many, many times, he knows it already. So he'll very, very quickly jump in to tell you what the law is. Why should he waste your time? Why should he waste his time? Why should he, and also, why should he look like he's inexperienced? So he'll jump in. The Gemara says, when it says not to make steps, it says to make a ramp. I don't know, to me, I thought a ramp, maybe you go quicker, but according to the Gemara, you go slower. Maybe it's a bit, you feel a little bit more shaky on a ramp. You're not on flat ground. So on a ramp, you will tend to walk a little bit slower. He says when a judge sits in judgment, he must, no matter how many years of experience, no matter how many times he's judged exactly the same thing, the famous thing that it says in Pirkei Avos, Hevu Misunim Badin, be patient, slow, deliberate in judgment. Very nice, but we're not judges. So I saw a very beautiful thing, and I think we'll see next week inside the Sfasema says, the truth is we are all judges. We are judges constantly. Forget even for other people, we're meant to be judges. That's what Mishpatim is. Every moment of our life, we're supposed to be assessing what we're doing next, right? Every time, before we do something, we make a judgment. Should we do it? Should we not? Should we say this? Should we not? Should we look at this? Should we not? Right? That's what we're supposed to be doing constantly. That's what helps us do the right thing. A lot of times what we tend to do is to jump into things very quickly. Especially, as we said, things that we've done many, many times. No. Hevu misunim badin. Walk like it's a ramp. Slowly. Deliberately. Every moment, he says, as the Sfas Emes says, if you will be slower, you will make less mistakes, you will do more of the right thing in the right way properly. You will constantly be evaluating and serving Hashem properly. And that's, again, the juxtaposition why this follows straight into Parshas Mishpatim. So it's actually magnificently beautiful. And this is something, as we say, so I mean, we could start, but it's just 5 minutes. I don't know if it pays to give out the next... Yes, Esther, good. We'll make a...